Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, I wrap up my exclusive coverage of this year's Essence Festival with interviews from the cast of The Haves and the Have-Nots, Snowfall, and much more. I also catch up with the ladies of GPB's newest talk show, A Seat at the Table, Deneen Milner, Christine White, and Monica Pearson. And closing out the show is theater director Eric J. Little and actor Keith Arthur Bolden from the True Colors production of Between Riverside and Crazy. I'll also be playing songs from Lettucey's Sometimes Orange But Feeling Blue CD, which turns 15 years old this year. But first, here's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
The Fox series star is looking for females between the ages of 18 to 30 to portray exotic dancers for the upcoming season. The ladies must have advanced exotic dancing experience. If you fit this description, please submit your photo in a non-nudity outfit to star@centralcasting.com with the word pole in the subject line of the email. Please, no Instagram or Snapchat photos with filters. In other related entertainment news, the Oscar-winning director of Moonlight, Barry Jenkins, is set to direct a film adaptation of James Baldwin's classic story, If Beale Street Could Talk. Jenkins reportedly wrote the screenplay during the summer of 2013 along with Moonlight and has been working with Baldwin's estate. Production is slated to begin this October. Oscar-nominated director and screenwriter Ava DuVernay is teaming up with Netflix again for a mini series on The Central Park Five. DuVernay is going to pen the script and direct the project that will chronicle the story of five men of color who were wrongly convicted of the brutal rape of a white woman in New York's famed Central Park in 1989. The case was regarded as one of the most widely publicized crimes of the 1980s. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
The autumn leaves judge by my window, baby. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips, those summer kisses, yes. Those sunburned hands I used to hold. Oh, baby, since you went away, the days go golden long. And soon I hear old winter song, yes. But I miss you most of all, my darling. As when the autumn leaves, they start to fall.
This is Lisa Arendelle, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
My first guests are the host of Georgia Public Broadcasting's newest talk show, A Seat at the Table. It airs on Sunday evenings at 6:30 p.m. and features Deneen Milner, Christine White, and Monica Pearson. The 30-minute weekly program includes open dialogue about topics ranging from national news to family, kids, career, and medicine to sexuality, beauty, fashion, and relationships. The ladies stopped by the Upfront Studios recently to chat about the success of the show and why everyone is welcome to have a seat at the table.
Good morning, ladies, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
Thank you.
So, like I said before we got started, I'm so excited to have you all three here in the studio. I know it's a little tough because everyone's schedule is kind of all over the place, but thank you so much for taking time out to be guests on Upfront. Let's start with some introductions. We have entertainment attorney and cultural economist and sort of a low-key activist. I remember that from the press conference, Ms. Christine White.
Hi, how are you?
We also have New York Times best-selling author and award-winning journalist, Ms. Deneen Milner.
That's me.
All right. And as well as, last but not least, Atlanta media icon, legend, Ms. Monica Pearson.
Thank you for having us.
No problem. So let's jump right into this. Let's start from the very, very beginning. How did you ladies get involved with this show?
I got a call from Taya Ryan, but before I got the call from Taya, I got a heads up from Tiffany Rideau, who is one of the producers now of the show, saying, I've been thinking about doing this. Remember, I told you we should do a show where black women really say what's on their mind. So she convinced Taya, because she and Taya, who is the general manager, vice president of GPB, they traveled together. And they had different ways of child rearing. And then all of a sudden it occurred, you really don't understand how black women operate. Even though I've known you for years and we've worked together, you still don't get it. And so the two of them sat down, thrashed it out, and came up with this idea that the show is now called A Seat at the Table, which the title came from several things to my youngsters, as I call them. It's Solange, but, you know, I got it from Shirley Chisholm.
Okay. Anybody want to shout? Yeah,
I mean, I think that there was some energy at GPB always around what's going on in the community, and some of the activism that I was doing, it put me in contact with Taya. And we talked about doing a show with a CAU alum, Tierney Gundy. I have to shout out Tierney. And so we talked about, with all of the activism we were doing, doing a show about black women. And then a few years later, Tierney is now Judge Gundy. And so Taya called me and asked me about, you know, what I would think about doing a show that was real. I remember her saying, it has to be real. You have to tell us exactly what's on your mind, exactly what you're thinking.
And then I got invited by a mutual friend of Monica and mine, who thought that I would be good for the show, and told Monica about me, and Monica told Taya, and Taya invited me in, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Now, what was the selling point, Ms. Pearson, to bring you out of retirement? Because you stopped doing television, and then you were doing radio.
The selling point? Yeah. First of all, when you can work with two bright young women like these two, that's the first thing. I was excited because we do have connections in so many ways. In the case, it was Valerie Boyd, who was my advisor at the University of Georgia when I was getting my master's, and she and Deneen are great friends. And then Christine's mom, I knew her, but I knew her aunt even better. And I remember Christine when she was a little girl. So the opportunity to work with two very intelligent, outspoken women appealed to me. But most of all, what appealed to me was the ability to say what I had been biting my tongue over for now since 1969, being in the media. It was an opportunity to say how I felt about issues, how I felt about being a black woman in a predominantly at that time white society. And now that we are changing to where we who are the minority are going to be the majority. So it was like, okay, I no longer have to have a muzzle. I can now say what I want to say and not have to worry about the repercussions.
Yeah. And now you all talk about some very interesting topics, but so far, what's been your favorite topic of discussion?
I actually keep going back to the N-word. I think maybe because it's we've had so many things come up in the past, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks that still continue to put the word on blast. It makes it something that we have to continue to sort of debate whether or not it's appropriate, when it's appropriate. And so we only really scratched the surface on the show. We really just sort of got into our personal feelings, but it's in the media. And so I feel like there's so much to be said about the show. So I can't wait to go back and watch it again and see what we said. Because, you know, we really were able to discuss our feelings about the word from different generations.
And we disagree.
Yeah, that's true.
And we disagree.
Yes.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. I really like all of them. It's hard to pick which one I like the most, but I really like our show that we did on what is woke and who is woke.
Yeah.
And,
that
right?
was my favorite.
That was a good one. Yeah, and then colorism. Yes. And then whether or not black men support black women like black women support black men, which is a really good sort of hot one. So we don't shy away from controversial topics. And the beauty, I think, of the way that we talk about it is that we talk about it the same way that we would if we were in our kitchen as girlfriends,
right,
talking about these subjects. There really is no difference between me and my girlfriends at home and me and my girlfriends on the television.
And I think that's what makes this show so different. Because I had someone said, well, it's like The Real. I said, no. Right. You can call it The Real View from black women who are not afraid to say what they think.
Exactly.
And I think that that's what makes it so different. Because the three of us really do have differing views, but we also at the same time share some what I call common ground. And the one thing that I think is common among the three of us is that we don't want our daughters, and we all have daughters, to go through what we went through. And that if nothing else, they're going to be, and I love to use Deneen's phrase, unapologetically Black.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have my fist in the air right now.
and that was actually one of my questions. What, you know, because there's so many shows out there that, that viewers can tune into. You've got The Real, you've got The View, you've got The Talk. What is it that you, what is the I guess the thing that makes this show so different from the others?
So, well, you might hear them talking about Kim Kardashian and her latest antics. If we're talking about Kim Kardashian, we're talking about Black women's features on white women's bodies and how she manages to win with that versus how we feel about her winning. So there's, for the other shows, there's talk about pop culture and what's happening in pop culture on Twitter and on, you know, the news or in the blogs right now. We're talking about a very specific way of being as Black women and how we look at every single one of these topics, specifically from a Black woman's space, unapologetically. We're not holding back anything. We're not trying to sugarcoat for an audience that doesn't necessarily look like us. You are getting Black women's perspectives, straight talk, no chaser, and we're not trying to sugarcoat anything that we have to say about pop culture from our very specific viewpoint.
I actually had someone send me an email afterwards, a white woman who had been to the Bill Nigut show when we actually taped it there. And she wrote me a note and simply said, I wish I had a safe place to discuss things with you. And I said, you do. You can call me and we'll sit down. But who else can I have? She said. I felt that in that room, it was a safe place, but I was still afraid to say what was on my mind. Because she had questions about the differences between religions, how Black folks go about religion and how white folks and Jewish people go about religion.
Right.
And I think that's what we hope to do, is open up a door so that Black and white women can talk openly and honestly.
Now, let me ask you, and I'm going to throw this actually to Christine and to Deneen. How did your previous careers prepare you for this show? Because, of course, we know Miss Pearson has been on television for years. But.
Yeah, but Miss Pearson couldn't speak her mind on television. Because as my husband said after he watched the first episode, well, I don't think you're going to have to be able to get a job in commercial media anymore.
But how does your careers prepare you for this?
Well, my background is as a journalist. So I covered politics and entertainment for a very long time. I've written 27 books, all with African-Americans from a very distinctly African-American perspective. I run my own website that measures the intersection between Black parenting and race. So everything that I've ever done in my career has been geared towards speaking the truth about Black folks and our condition. So this is just a natural extension of that. I'm, instead of running my mouth on a website or in a newspaper or in a magazine, I'm doing it on television. So,
Christine?
Oh, there are so many things that bring me here. I mean, I think part of it is having gone to Spelman, which I'm very proud, that experience. But I also came from a family that was in the civil rights movement. My dad was a part of SNCC, and I grew up in Oakland. And so we were constantly having these conversations about what it meant to be Black or Latino or Chicano, and the impact of just all of the cultures mixing. And so that's been a part of my dialogue my whole life. So when I started working in the music industry and I became a entertainment attorney, I was keenly aware of the way that Black musicians or musicians of color were treated differently, how the money that they made wasn't necessarily going back into our communities. And that really spurred my activism in Atlanta. And so I have been, as you say, a low-key activist for several years, as you know, and balancing that with being an attorney and representing entertainers. And so seeing both sides of that, I mean, I'm a feminist who works in hip hop. So, you know, it's just, there are so many
conundrums.
There are so many things that that bring me to a place where I feel like if I don't talk about it in one way or another, I may burst. And I know that there are a lot of women who feel like that. We have to grapple with these issues.
Well, ladies, thank you so very much for taking time out of your schedule.
Thanks for having us. Yes,
and again, the show airs on Sunday evenings at 6:30 on GPB. And that is Christine White, Deneen Milner, and Monica Pearson, host of A Seat at the Table. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Upfront listeners, you can now follow us on Instagram under Upfront the Show. We'll have exclusive photos, giveaways, and much more. That's Upfront the Show on Instagram.
I'm sitting here alone, waiting for this man to come, waiting in a small cafe. He reminds me of a tall black coffee. He arrives to me on time, dressed in his black suit and noir tie, a black hat tilted to the side. What a wonderful Thursday.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Our next segment features some of my remaining interviews from the recent Essence Festival that took place June 29th through July 2nd in New Orleans. Upfront was there on Radio Row and caught up with a number of TV, film, and music stars, like the cast of Tyler Perry's The Haves and the Have-Nots, Gavin Houston, who plays Jeffrey Harrington, Angela Robinson, who plays Veronica Harrington, and Tyler Lepley, who stars as Benjamin Benny Young, stopped by the table to weigh in on their characters and this new season.
I think Veronica is Veronica. And she will be doing a lot more Veronica and wreaking havoc on her wonderful, amazing, handsome, loving son.
Yes, there's sure to be some abuse to Jeffrey here on account of Veronica. But I think Jeffrey is definitely coming into his own. And I think that's just going to cause a little bit more resistance from Veronica as well in terms of that. It's like Pacquiao versus Mayweather here. It's like it's about to go down, I feel, because he's just now living his own life and just now starting to own it. So I just think it's going to cause more friction between the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're dealing with a family that, you know, because of certain consequences is like, you know, broken, shattered, if you will. You know, you had mentioned little Q being taken from us. And it's like right now to try to figure out how to pick up all those pieces with a family that's still kind of at war. You haven't really seen, you know, Candace and Hannah come together and agree on anything or even show love to each other at any point yet. And Benny's still caught up in the middle of that. And then you can, you know, compound it with a death in the family. So it's like to try to figure that out while still keeping on the right and not just going crazy. Because, you know, I know in my life, sometimes when things go bad, it's just like, you know, middle finger to the sky, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, to try to find our way back together in this trying time. I can't wait for you guys to see.
Award-winning filmmaker and director John Singleton also stopped by to chat about his new FX series, Snowfall, and the inspiration behind it.
Well, Snowfall is basically the story about how cocaine changed Los Angeles. You know, that's where the title comes from. You know, the snowfall is that storm that's coming, and it's cocaine, you know, coming to L.A. Inspiration was just my life and what I saw growing up, you know, and it's a story that I've always wanted to tell, you know, and I mean, that was really generally it.
British actor Damson Idris is Snowfall's leading man and talked candidly about his audition process and working with Singleton.
He made me jump through a number of fire hoops to get the role. It started with a tape in London. And, you know, one of the auditions was, you know, me hanging out with him in South Central LA and just walking through his neighborhoods and seeing the people that are there and talking to people. But the irony was I was in an American accent all the time. So it was like an exam, man. But it was amazing. You know, his mom came and it was a beautiful experience. And it definitely made me stronger and prepared me well for the role.
Idris also opened up about music's role in helping him to develop his character.
Man, I watched all of John's movies, of course. You know, I listened to a bunch of music, you know, Kendrick Lamar and The Past as well. You know, Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg. I listened to Park. You know, I listened to so much music. Music had a huge impact on the way I looked at this role. And then obviously Dub C coming on set every day from West Side Connection, you know, and telling me, yeah, you got to talk like this, homie. Like, it was really easy once you had those players in set, you know, and people like John Singleton, who's so passionate about the stories he tells. It's not hard to, you know, reach that bar because he's there already.
Snowfall also features actors Malcolm M. Mays and Atlanta's own Isaiah John. Here's what they had to say about their characters and scoring the audition.
Well, my manager, she found out about it 2015 and just kind of missed that window. So 2016 came back around and I got the chance to audition, took that chance. They loved it, flew me out to California, and then the rest is history, you know, so. Oh, I play Leon Simmons. You know, I play a kid that's from South Central, in and out of juvie for assault. So I'm like a hothead, and I would say that I'm the hitman out of the group, you know?
How did I find out about the role? My homeboy, actually, one of my only actor friends, no offense, Isaiah. Isaiah's the next one, but he's, you know, more of a good kid. Tristan Wilds called me and was like, bro, I'm getting, people are sending me a project, and I think that, ironically, you're best suited for it. And it was this project called Snowfall about crack in South Central Los Angeles. And that shows you how benevolent, like, because you always hear the idea of, like, black actors crabbing a bucket. But that was one of those instances where he was like, get your agent on this because I think this is perfect for you. And that was, like, really, I think, magnanimous of him. And we attacked it. I went in there. I had a prior history with John before, but we hadn't seen each other in a while. And I was auditioning for the lead. And I guess I gave a good enough performance that they kept on bringing me back. And somehow it stuck, even through all the throes of production.
They also talked about what it was like working with Singleton.
Oh, it's great. It's like, it's a dream come true. You know, I grew up in watching his movies, you know, so the fact that I can, you know, call him whenever I need to or even work with him, you know, it's a blessing. So it's cool for me.
I mean, as a Los Angeles native and as a kid from South Central, it's nothing less than a dream come true, of course. It's serendipitous. And if anything, it's like if you was Italian and got and lived in New York as a kid and watched all of the Goodfellas and got to work with Martin Scorsese, that's a similar parallel experience for me with John Singleton. It's like I'm after this, like everything else is gravy.
In a sentimental mood, I can see the stars go through my room while your loving attitude is like a flame that lights the gloom.
Hi, this is Iyanla Van Zandt, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My last segment features Eric J. Little, director of Kenny Leon's True Colors Theater Company production of Between Riverside and Crazy, along with one of the show's actors, Keith Arthur Bolden. Both stopped by the Upfront Studios this week to chat about the show, which is playing now through August the 6th. The story follows Pops, an ex-cop played by veteran actor Earl Billings, who is waiting on an impending verdict for a lawsuit against the NYPD when his son, played by Bolden, and his girlfriend move back into his rent-controlled apartment. Check out our conversation.
Well, good morning, guys, and welcome to Upfront. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Good, brother.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So happy to have you guys here in the studio. Eric, this isn't your first time on Upfront.
Nah, I think this second, third. I can't remember.
I think this might be your third time. But Keith, this is your first time.
My grand premiere.
Yeah.
Roll out the carpet.
So we have this amazing show that is taking place. I believe it opens this weekend over at the Southwest Arts Center. We're talking about none other than Kenny Leon's True Colors production of Between Riverside and Crazy. So, guys, how did you all get involved with this project?
Well, ironically, Keith and I last summer saw this play together when we were in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they were playing it at Steppenwolf. We were at the Black Theater Network conference. And it's funny, neither one of us knew at that particular time that we were being involved with it.
No idea.
So I got a call back in, I think, February or March from Jen McEwen, who's managing director at True Colors, and asked me, hey, what are you doing this summer? Do you want to direct? And I was like, yeah. And that's what happened with me. It was a blessing to come back after directing Fetch Clay over there. And
amazing
then
show.
Yeah, we had auditions and I guess this guy over here did all right. So I cast him as a junior.
Yeah. Now this is, we're going into, I guess, like maybe what, your fifth show that you've directed? Because generally you're on stage acting. Uh-huh. But lately you've sort of taken up the role of director. So this is your fourth show.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay. How have those previous shows helped you with directing this particular show?
I think one of the things that I've learned and I continue to learn is that as the director, and I probably said this before, but it's really just there. You don't have to have the right answer. You just have to approve and see what you feel is the right answer. And learn to know when to listen to your gut, when to listen to the designer's help, when to listen to the actors, and know what feels right. And also just know you got to try different things. And it's even funny, last night, Kenny, we had an invited dress. And even then, you know, Kenny was talking to me. He was saying he saw the invited dress and he gave me some notes. And I learned a whole lot just sitting there listening to him for a few minutes. So it's, yeah, you learn a lot by, it really is a collaborative process.
Yeah. Any pressure? This show has picked up so many awards. It won a Pulitzer Prize for drama. It also picked up the New York Drama Critics Circle Award. So is there any pressure on you as a director with, you know, having the original show having won all of these accolades?
Well, it wasn't any pressure to now, Ray. No. I think, a little bit of pressure, a little nervousness. Of course, I think with any time that you're directing, period, I think, you know, with all of them, there's been pressure. But with this particular show, yeah, it's because there are people, I think, number one, just the name alone. For those people who are not familiar with the show, they have Between Riverside and Crazy, like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah. But then the people, of course, who know the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And playwright Steve Natalie Gurgis, who also wrote Mother Sucker in a Hat.
Okay.
And
Our Lady of 121st Street.
In Arabia, We All Be Kings. I mean, he's just a prolific playwright and part of the Labyrinth Theater Company in New York. So.
Yeah. Now, Keith, you're playing this character who is sort of put back in a situation that many of us don't want to ever have to do, but that's having to go back and live with our parents.
Yeah.
So how did you prepare for this role?
Looking at my brother. No, I'm kidding. Love you, Marcus. No, man, you know, I recently lost my mom in October. So, and my dad is living his life. And so, there's a little bit of art imitating life for me. I don't have to reach that far back, but I do have to reach a little deeper, because the things that I don't want to touch on, but things that are, they're right there at the tip of the surface. I don't have to do a lot of preparation. You know, it's pretty fresh and new for me.
Wow.
Because the character in the play has lost his mom. And it's only been about four or five months. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, the irony. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so in the audition process, which Eric took me through the ringers, 3 callbacks. I mean, what? Look at my resume. No, I'm kidding. So, no, this is great because we're colleagues. I teach at Spelman, teaches at Clark, and this is my first play in Atlanta. So it's good to be working with a friend and somebody I respect his work and his opinion. So, you know, just going through that process of the audition process and being in a room, I think the callback, it was a little tough.
Yeah.
You know, this scene with Pops and talking about mom.
Yeah.
Now what is it like working with Earl Billings, who is like a TV and film legend? God, I mean, this guy's been around forever.
Oh, Earl.
Oh, Earl. Hi, Earl. No, man, Earl's good, man. He's no nonsense, you know, but he is nonsense. It's kind of weird. I've been watching Earl ever since I was a kid on What's Happening, you know, and we've been Facebook friends for years, but we've been in the same room, but we've actually never like put arms around each other's neck. So to be on stage with him, I mean, I got casted and I said, hey man, we're going to be almost at the table. We're going to be on boards together. And I said, I'm excited to work with you. He said, you say that now. That was it. You say that now. But it's been a ride every night, man. And it gets deeper and deeper. You know, he started doing, I'll tell you after we're off of this, but he does something on stage during our scene. And it just took me to a place that was, it was right. But I noticed it because I was listening with my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So he surprised me.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I missed about being on the boards. I haven't been on the boards really kind of in a full equity production since 2013 when I did Dreamgirls in L.A. So being back on the boards, man, and going through a rehearsal process and being involved in it, it fulfills you much more than TV and film can. Even though that is fulfilling, but it's in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the, as I call them, the isms of the show. You've got mm-hmm. classism, racism. Mm-hmm. There are some generational issues going mm-hmm. on with that. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think for those who don't know, what the show is about is the character that Earl Billings is playing, Pops Washington. He's suing the NYPD because he actually got shot by another cop, a white rookie cop, mm-hmm. and he's suing the NYPD. So, of course, number one, a black man getting shot by the police, let's just say that's real relevant today. Mm-hmm. So people can come in with that in mind. So we already know, like you said, that part of it, that racism part, because I think that's what makes it interesting. Because there's a real life story. I don't know. I'm sure you've heard about it. I can't remember where it was. It was somewhere in Arkansas, St. Louis. I don't remember somewhere. But where a cop recently, he was an off-duty cop, and he got shot by another cop who happens to be white. So it's a real
and
thing.
Did he forgive that cop? He didn't press charges or anything like
that? I think,
right?
Yeah, he may not have.
I'll tell you, them boys in blue, boy, they stick together.
Mm. You know, but the difference is Pop's not. Pop's is suing. Right. So that's a big part of that, racism. And then another big thing in the story we were just talking about, if you're talking about that, is the redemption part of it. And not to give too much away, but just of how, you know, Pop's is trying to get redeemed, but at the same time, his and Junior's relationship, there's a redemptive part of that relationship, too.
What do you guys think is the overall takeaway message for Between Riverside and Crazy?
Beyond the redemption, I'll let Keith, you answer that.
Oh, man, you put me on the spot. I mean, I think there's a redemptive quality to it, but there's also an accepting.
Yeah.
Accepting people where they are, who they are, where they are at that moment. And I remember when my wife and I got married, a friend of ours blessed us by saying, you can't change him, Tinashe. You can't change him. You can't change him, Keith. And so, you know, just accepting people for where they are, and people are going to change and grow, but trying to change them on your own schedule, I don't think that's really possible. And I think that's kind of what Pop and Junior are going through, what Lulu and Junior are going through, you know, what Oswaldo and Pop are going through, and people just they have to see where they are, you know.
Cool. All right. You just heard the voices of Eric J. Little, who is the director of Between Riverside and Crazy, as well as Keith Arthur Bolden, who is starring in the show. It is taking place now through the, through August
6th.
August 6th.
Over at the Southwest Arts Center. You can check out more information at WCLK.com.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'd really like to thank all of my special guests. I would also like to thank my engineer, Mark Angel, and you. Please join us next Saturday, July 22nd at 9 a.m. as we'll be talking to the stars of the upcoming film, Girls Trip. You can also keep up with me during the week at raycornelius.com. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at wclk.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.